So as you approach the podium, as I mentioned earlier, please make yourself comfortable. Take whatever time you need to get that microphone adjusted and have your materials ready. And just make sure that you identify yourself again for the record, both your name as well as the client that you represent. So with that, you can go ahead, counsel.
Judge Bradholt, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Joel Novak, and in this case, I represent Adrian Howell, the appellant.
Make sure you put in for the frequent flyer miles.
There's five real issues in this case. First, the state of Minnesota passed a law that says if you refuse to take a blood test with a search warrant, that is a crime. That law is completely 100% constitutional. Second, if a person is in custody. Third, in custody and request for attorney, refusal of that request, and then questioning. In this case, law enforcement took Mr. Howell to the police station. He asked for an attorney. At that point, they must provide him with a telephone unless there's some time constraints that do not allow it. Looking at Friedman, a lot of the cases following Friedman talk about dicta and freedom and how the courts do not have to follow dicta. So I just want to read their holding. We hold that under the right to consult clause in Article 1, Section 6 of the Minnesota Constitution, an individual has the right, upon request, to a reasonable opportunity to obtain legal advice before deciding whether to submit to chemical testing. Two key phrases.
Okay, and that's from Friedman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Minnesota Supreme Court.
Yes, Your Honor.
But then the Minnesota Supreme Court in 2018 says, the constitutional right to counsel recognized in Friedman is not triggered unless the statutory implied consent advisory is read.
So the, it does, Your Honor.
Kind of backtrack.
A number of times the court has said there may be other circumstances. And the key circumstances is upon request and reasonable opportunity. If you look to all the cases, Condon was a DUI causing death, not applicable. Hun, there was no request. Rosenberg, no request. Mike, no request. Heenan, DNA, and no request.
But does the request matter if there's not a constitutionally recognized right to counsel in the first place? I mean, don't you have to first establish there's a right to counsel? Because if you ask for a lawyer and you don't have a right to talk to a lawyer, where's the violation?
I agree totally. But in this case, Mr. Howell had a right to an attorney because he was custodially being held. He was read his Miranda rights. He requested an attorney.
Arguing a right to counsel under the Fifth Amendment?
Both. The United States Constitution says that a person has a right to an attorney, and Minnesota Statute 481.10 says a person has a right to an attorney. Here, Mr. Howell, for three reasons, had a right to an attorney. Now, he didn't have a right to wait till next Thursday for an attorney, but he had a right to a reasonable opportunity to try and have one. At the time they, by the time they ask him if he would take a blood test, 2 hours and 18 minutes had passed. There was certainly time enough in that 2 hours and 18 minutes.
The alleged right to counsel one at a time.
Yes, Your Honor.
So first you're claiming right to counsel under the Minnesota Constitution, Article 1, Section 6, as interpreted in Friedman.
Yes, Your Honor.
And what do you say to the response that, well, Hun now says that right doesn't exist unless the police have read the implied consent advisory?
Hun was a different case, Your Honor. There was no request for an attorney. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, he had no right to an attorney. In this case,
why does the request matter? If what Hun says is there is no right to counsel under the Minnesota Constitution as recognized in Friedman unless the police read the advised consent or implied consent advisory, what does a lack of a request for counsel or a request for counsel matter?
Because Friedman says upon request. Implied consent used to be a big deal. Not so much anymore. But all these cases following Friedman, well, McDonald actually expanded Friedman, but after that, when it started to be weaned back, they all talk about implied consent. But really,
I'm not getting an answer to my question. I'll just
say
it one more time clearly.
Okay.
If Hun says there is no right to counsel under the Minnesota Constitution, as recognized in Friedman, unless an implied consent advisory is read. Why does it matter that your client asked for counsel if no implied consent advisory was read?
Because it didn't set the Minnesota Constitution in stone for every issue. It just said the right that we recognize in Freedmen doesn't exist, but other rights like it may.
So are you arguing for some sort of expansion or recognition of a right to counsel under the Minnesota Constitution in these circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor. This is an issue of first impression.
A warrant is obtained.
Yes.
There's no need to read the implied consent advisory as currently contained in the statutes regarding breath tests.
Correct.
Your argument is, well, in this circumstance where we have a warrant for testing and someone asks for counsel, we should give them a lawyer under the Minnesota Constitution for the same reasons we would give them one under Freedmen if there were an implied consent advisory.
Correct, Your Honor.
So that's your argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can we agree that there is no case that says there's a right to counsel in those circumstances, and that for us to do that, we would be expanding the right to counsel originally recognized in Freedmen and restricted in Hunt?
I would say recognizing a further right. But yes, Your Honor.
We're going beyond what the Supreme Court has provided in terms of a right to counsel, Article 1, Section 6, under Freedmen.
Correct, Your Honor.
And why should we do that?
Because there is a right to counsel. Let me see if I can find it quick here and quote it to you. But well, I can't. I'll just say a right to counsel is recognized in the Minnesota Constitution. It's also recognized in 481.
481 what? Could you?
Minnesota Statute 481.10. I do have that here, so I can. No, I guess I don't, but it's in the brief. In looking at the McDonald case, where it dealt with four individual defendants, the right to counsel was found just because they were given bad advice, that you don't have a right to counsel. Here, there was an actual request. There wasn't even a request there. Now, I understand that's not the law now, but it shows the breadth of what the Minnesota Constitution says. Here, there was an actual refusal.
I'm trying to get a sense. So, if there's no statutory basis, it seems to me you're arguing for the proposition that a constitutional right exists simply by virtue of asking for an attorney, where there is no underlying, even if there's no underlying constitutional hook for that.
Four elements, Your Honor. Has to be in custody, has to request the attorney, refusal has to be given, and then no questions asked after that point can be used.
Okay, so you're arguing Fifth Amendment Miranda right to counsel now.
I believe that's the same under Freedmen.
Well, no, because Freedmen is based on Article 1, Section 6, which is the general right to counsel that anyone has when they're charged in criminal proceeding. Whereas Minnesota Constitution, I think it's Article 1, Section 7, I might be off on the section, corresponds to the Fifth Amendment, which recognizes, pursuant to Miranda, a limited right to counsel stemming from the right against self-incrimination. So there are two different constitutional sources for the right to counsel, which we have to keep separate because they're analyzed separately.
Well, but they both involve criminal proceedings. That is both evident, or that's evident when there's custody.
But here's my question for you about the Fifth Amendment right to counsel under the federal Constitution.
Okay.
The United States Supreme Court has said clearly in a couple of cases, a request to submit to chemical testing in a DWI situation does not trigger the protections of the Fifth Amendment in terms of a right to counsel before asking for submission to testing. And the Minnesota Supreme Court held in NIFLOT that on the question of whether there is a federal right to counsel under the Fifth Amendment when you ask somebody to take a test, Supreme Court precedent controls there is not. And McDonald made clear that at least at that point in time, the Supreme Court had never recognized a more expansive right to counsel attendant to the right against self-incrimination under the Minnesota Constitution. And I've not found a case since McDonald where the Supreme Court has said, well, we're going to give greater protection under the Minnesota Constitution such that we would allow a right to counsel attendant to a request to submit to testing. So again, I'm looking at a situation where it seems that what you're asking us to do is inconsistent with United States Supreme Court precedent in terms of the federal right against self-incrimination and would require an expansion of greater protection under the Minnesota Constitution, which the Minnesota Supreme Court has not yet done.
I'll start with the federal cases, and then I'll move on to McDonald and end with what's happened after Friedman. In Neville, he waived his right to counsel. He said, I'm willing to talk to you. Second, the evidence obtained under the South Dakota statute was not a new crime. It was just some evidence that he had been drinking. Neville was polluted. He was obviously drinking. This is not Neville. They're the trial, well, I'll skip the trial court. The case, first off, was an honest face challenge. We're not making an honest face challenge. The Minnesota statute is 100% constitutional. This is an as applied challenge.
I'm very confused because I understood your argument to be that your client's right to counsel was violated.
Yes, Your Honor, by the police, not by the state.
As applied challenge.
As applied. The state can pass a statute that says if you refuse to take a blood test under a court order, that's a crime. We have no problem with that. In this case, he was in custody. He requested an attorney. That attorney was denied. Then they ask him, will you take a blood test? Now, if you look at the statute, nowhere in the statute does it say, ask him if he'll take a blood test. It's a search warrant, just like any other search warrant. All they had to do is say, come on, we're going to the hospital, I'm going to get a blood test. If he then refused, that would have been a spontaneous statement, good conviction. The only reason to ask the question rather than say, get up, we're going to the hospital to get a blood test, is to get the no answer so they can convict him of a second crime.
Perhaps, or perhaps is to apply the statute, which allows Minnesota drivers to say no, even if there is a warrant.
That doesn't give him any more ability to say no than if they said, come on, get up, we're going to the hospital to get a blood test. If he says no, then it's a good statute.
It's allowing your client the opportunity to exercise his rights under the statute by making the request rather than just silently carting him off, putting him down on a gurney and injecting him.
But I'm not saying they should put him on a gurney and take him. He has, well, not the right. If he says no, the state is restricted from forcing him.
But you're saying he should, on his own, assert that right and should not be asked.
He should force the government to not force him. Minnesota appellate courts have clearly said it's not a right. It's just the state can no longer proceed at that point. And there's nothing that says we have to be nice and say, will you do this?
But what constitutional provision did the police violate when they said, will you submit to this test?
They violated the Fifth Amendment because unlike the South Dakota statute,
In McDonald, the Minnesota Supreme Court rejected the argument that because the legislature had amended the statutes to make test refusal a crime, there therefore was a Fifth Amendment concern. In other words, the argument you're making that, well, this is unlike Neville, because refusal is a crime, therefore we have to have Fifth Amendment protections. The Minnesota Supreme Court rejected that in McDonald.
But, okay, they rejected it based on Neville. Neville never said that. The issue in Neville was, it was an on-the-face challenge, was the South Dakota law unconstitutional? No, it wasn't unconstitutional, just like Minnesota's isn't unconstitutional, because nowhere does it direct anybody to ask a question. Secondly, in the South Dakota case, if he refused, there was another crime. There was just some evidence of the DUI. Here in Minnesota, you got two choices if you're asked, will you take a blood test? Yes or no? there's a 50-50 shot that you're going to give the complete, only, and all evidence that convicts you. How can that not be incriminating? The only reason to ask the question is to get a no. It's a completely different case.
Well, it's not the only reason. The reason would be to determine whether you're going to go through the trouble to process the individual, whether it's even, I mean, there are plausible reasons.
There's a better reason for the state to just say, come on, get up, let's go take a test. Number one, they're going to get a lot more tests. Thank you.
You can finish your statement, counsel.
But for our purposes, not by asking a question to get a testimonial answer that's used as a testimonial answer is something they don't have to do. The order, both of the court order and the statute use order, directing the law enforcement. It's directory language. It's not requestive language. Thank you, Your Honor.
Go right ahead. Counsel, just, sorry, if you don't mind.
Question out there. So I'm curious as to how your client was prejudiced. Are you saying the question induced the no answer? Because if your client was inclined to decline the test, why does it matter that the evidence was his statement as opposed to his exercising that right, either physically or voluntarily refusing?
Because if sometime in that long period of time he was allowed to contact an attorney, no attorney that was not committing malpractice would have said, no, don't take the test under Minnesota statutory structure, because that's going to be evidence against him in the driving under the influence test, plus it's going to put a noose around his neck on a second offense that's as great as the first.
The prejudice is he would have gotten advice.
He would have taken the test. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, if you would put in
one more question. I'm surprised by your argument today that you're relying on 4110 of Minnesota statutes, because I don't recall seeing that in my preparation of this case, and I'm not seeing it as I look through your blue brief. On rebuttal, can you tell us where in your briefing you raised this argument?
Yes,
rebuttal.
No, you can. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal, okay. And Judge Larkin's just asking you to take a look at that question and start
presentation.
There.
First, we're not letting you sit down. Now,
yeah, can we make up our minds? So, counsel for respondent, we are ready for you.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Peter Magnuson. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the respondent, state of Minnesota. McDonald quotes from Neville, and this is at page 855. Rather, the testing request is merely police conduct normally attendant to arrest and custody, and similar to a police request to submit to fingerprinting or photography. To say that the cop should have done something, handled this differently, I don't see how the cops could have handled this differently.
If it's not a per se crime to decline fingerprinting or photography.
Correct. It's not. But as later courts have noted, the fact that it was later criminalized didn't change the analysis. And I just want to touch briefly on this idea that asking the court to expand, and if you're in police custody and you ask for an attorney, they should give you a reasonable opportunity to consult with an attorney. Where does that end? Where is the boundary for that? I have been in front of members of this panel arguing many cases seeking to expand the right to counsel to field sobriety testing. You're clearly in custody at that time, and people routinely raise arguments on appeal that I have the right to speak with an attorney and I should be able to ask for it, and you should grant me that.
Well, you're being detained, not necessarily in custody for the purposes of the traditional Miranda analysis.
Correct, but this argument doesn't seem to, it's difficult to ascertain exactly what constitutional provision this argument is rooted on. And I just don't see how that, where we can set the boundaries for it. Then we will have a whole another hornet's nest of cases arguing about whether you are in custody when you're you're clearly not free to leave when you're asked to do field sobriety tests. So is this going to be the same?
There's a whole body of law, though, addressing, under Miranda at least, whether a person is actually in custody as opposed to just being detained. It may not feel that much different, but you know, we've got many cases, even where the individual's in handcuffs, where they're just being detained and not in custody for the purposes of Miranda. So it seems that there's already a body of law that would avoid opening up a whole new hornet's nest as to when custody occurs.
You're more optimistic than I am. As I was listening to the argument, I just don't see where the functional boundary is for it. There's going to be lots of litigation about how, what are the boundaries of this new right, and where is it rooted? I guess that is really the question that I have. There is no Fifth Amendment right here. The Sixth Amendment right was raised in one sentence in appellant's brief. It's not really argued here, but again, the case law, I think, is clear on that, that there is no Sixth Amendment right here. And the Freedman right, I think Hunn and this court's decision in State v. Mike is controlling on this. Now, I was crossing my fingers that the Supreme Court would release its decision yesterday, but it didn't come out. We would have gotten some guidance here, but at the state of the law right now, it's pretty straightforward. Appellant did not have a right to counsel at the time, and nothing was violated here. That may change when the Supreme Court releases its decision, but as of right now, that's the state of the law.
Now, again, in Mike and Freeman, we were dealing with Article 1, Section 6, the general right to counsel, if you will, as opposed to the right to counsel, attendant to the right against self-incrimination. Could you tell me how we reconcile the Supreme Court's explanation of the constitutional privilege against self-incrimination discussed in State Heinonen with sort of the approach in Neville and McDonnell?
You'll have to, if you could remind me what part
Heinonen
of
is the one that says it's okay to ask for a DNA sample. That doesn't give rise to a Fifth Amendment concern.
And how that would contrast with
so here's the thing that's odd to me about Heinonen. Heinonen says, let me find the language. I believe it's quoted in the blue brief. A defendant's communication is only testimonial under the Fifth Amendment when it discloses any knowledge he might have or speaks his guilt. And I believe the Supreme Court reason in Heinonen, you know, asking someone if they'll provide a DNA sample in no way elicits an answer that's going to speak to someone's guilt. Sort of like, yes, I will, no, I won't. That doesn't implicate the person. Whereas asking a person if he's going to take a breath test or cooperate with a warrant, the answer does speak the person's guilt because the answer is a crime, depending on what the answer is. So what do we do with Heinonen and its suggestion that if you ask somebody a question and the answer could speak their guilt, that does give rise to a Fifth Amendment concern?
I wish I had a straightforward answer for you.
Yeah, and I'll note that in Heinonen, they actually said, blah, blah, blah. This court has concluded that a Miranda warning is not required because the act of consenting to a search is not an incriminating testimonial communication under the Fifth Amendment. It seems that asking someone to consent to a warranted blood or urine test could require an incriminating testimonial communication.
Well,
do we just say, well, you know what, Heinonen's not a DWI case, and the U.S. Supreme Court, the Minnesota Supreme Court has said in DWI case, the response to this question isn't a compelled statement, therefore no Fifth Amendment concern, and leave it to the Supreme Court to decide whether or not they want to expand the Minnesota Constitution?
Well, bear with me on this. I'm trying to come up with this on the fly, and now the name of the two cases escapes me where the Supreme Court found the refusal statute unconstitutional. Anyway, one of the defenses that the state raised in there...
In Birchfield? I mean, U.S. Supreme Court?
The Minnesota Supreme Court.
In any event, who can keep track anymore? Go ahead.
You know which cases I'm talking about. One of the defenses that the state made in that case is that there was evident that you shouldn't exclude this evidence. And the Minnesota Supreme Court declined to address that. They said that isn't...
There's no suppression.
There's no evidence to suppress.
That is interesting because the relief sought here was for suppression of the refusal. And I thought, well, that's odd because the Minnesota Supreme Court seems to have made clear that the exclusionary rule applies to the fruit of a search. And when we have a refusal, we have no search. We have nothing to suppress.
Yes.
However, I think if this... were properly argued, it would not be that we'll use suppress the refusal. It would be that my right to counsel was violated, therefore you can't use any statement stemming from that right. It's not a Fourth Amendment suppression issue, which was at play when the Supreme Court said the suppression remedy doesn't apply here.
Yes.
I still think there could be a remedy if there's a right to counsel violation. The question is there a right to counsel violation?
Under the current state of the law, no, I don't think there is. There is no right to counsel violation.
Do you think, food for thought, in McDonald, you know, the Supreme Court was presented with the argument, okay, look, you have Neville, but now you have a statutory change, refusal is a crime, you should depart from Neville. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said, we don't see a need to depart from Neville just because refusal is a crime. However, they couch that with this statement. In this particular context, where an individual is requested to submit to blood alcohol content testing and potentially faces criminal penalties for refusing to do so, and where that individual is provided a reasonable opportunity to consult an attorney before deciding whether to submit as requested, neither the state nor federal privilege against compelled self-incrimination is violated.
Is that in the Moser part?
That is, it is in the... Just as a public driver, it doesn't tell us which driver. My point is, it seems like the Minnesota Supreme Court, when it said, we've never recognized a greater right to counsel flowing from the privilege against self-incrimination under the Minnesota Constitution, and we're not going to do so here because here we have people talking to lawyers, so we're not concerned. Now, if we have a situation where people aren't talking to lawyers, does that maybe open the door for an argument that, well, maybe the Supreme Court would view this differently if we're not going to give people a right to talk to a lawyer?
My argument in response to that is going to be that it's a warrant, and it's different than the typical implied consent advisory that was dealt with in McDonald. Here, it's been submitted to an impartial magistrate. The impartial magistrate has issued a warrant. There's no challenge to the warrant. That's one of the, I think I touch on it briefly in my, in respondent's brief.
That the warrant, if you asking someone to submit to the warrant, they say no, they've just now committed a crime. So you're asking a person's in custody, they've been giving Miranda warnings, the police ask express questioning, so it's interrogation, the answer could speak a person's guilt. I mean, right now I don't know that the law says, well, the law seems to say we're not concerned because it's not compelled testimony, but I think it might be an open question going forward whether that remains true if the person is not given a lawyer.
I wish much of the case law in this area would have developed differently. I wish decades ago an argument would have been made that the implied consent advisory scheme is reasonable. And if we're going to look at the entire scheme and say that it's reasonable, when we start pulling pieces out of it or in constitute or judicially inserting pieces in, then maybe it isn't reasonable anymore. But as it stands right now, it's a scheme that balances the state's rights to get information while also not forcing this. And I argued a case, and I was surprised that I had to argue it, but it was one of the gap cases before the 171-177 had come down, but Birchfield had come down. And a guy said, no, I'm not going to take the test. And they took him into St. Cloud, and three deputies held him down and jabbed a needle in him. And I don't think anybody wants that to happen. So we make accommodations to allow people to refuse, and then here we are.
Did you argue, Mike, or did you go to the Mike arguments?
I did not argue that.
My understanding of Mike is the issue, well, Mike was PFR and stayed, but then Rosenbusch went up on the issue of whether there is a right to counsel, a la Friedman, where the police have a warrant and, they didn't provide the advisory in that case.
Did not.
But at least the Supreme Court should be telling us in Rosenbusch whether there's a right to counsel when testing is sought, not under the implied consent provision, which now seems to only apply to breath tests, but also when it's a warranted test under 171. So they'll tell us that much.
I have my fingers.
So if they then tell us that, whether it's up or down, that might raise the next question of, well, if there is no right to counsel, what does that do to your Fifth Amendment analysis or Minnesota constitutional analysis regarding the right against self-incrimination in McDonald, which seemed to be tied to this notion that we're not concerned because we're letting them talk to lawyers?
Yes, because they have this limited right, yes.
So if they no longer have the option to talk to a lawyer before answering the question, perhaps the Supreme Court takes another look, or this court is asked to take another look.
I'm guessing there will be members of the defense bar that will be.
But first we have to decide whether there's a right to a lawyer.
Yes.
Under these circumstances.
Yes, just requesting it doesn't create it.
Seems true.
If there are no further questions.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose.
Your Honor, I'll get to your question on the briefs right off the bat. It started with the appellant's brief where he said Mike should be used and not Friedman, brought up implied consent. That's on page 6. And in our rebuttal brief, we responded saying it was about suppression of blood evidence, not answers obtained in violation of Friedman. Went on to say that Friedman was citing to Schabert, and Schabert construed Minnesota statute 418.1. That was on page 3 of the rebuttal brief, Your Honor.
What I was asking is, you said here today, you're asserting three grounds for a right to counsel that would serve as a basis for finding a violation of relief. One is Sixth Amendment right to counsel and Minnesota Constitution, Fifth Amendment right to counsel, and the statutory right to counsel under 481.10. I'm not seeing arguments in your brief that your client is entitled to relief in the form of dismissal because 481.10 was violated.
No, Your Honor. In our initial brief, we said Fifth Amendment and Friedman. We only cite to 481 as analysis of Friedman.
Okay.
Looking at the post-Friedman case.
Can I ask you a theoretical question that's
yes, Your Honor.
Plaguing me through this whole case? So, if your client had been arrested for drunk driving and in custody, and then asked something completely unrelated to the case. Was your brother involved in a burglary last month? Do you know anything about that? Would your client have a constitutional right, either the Minnesota Constitution or the federal Constitution, to counsel before that question can be asked?
None that I can see, Your Honor.
And this is where my sticking point is. If the person asked that question, were to give a false statement to police, that might constitute a crime in and of itself.
Yes, Your Honor.
But still no right to counsel.
Correct, Your Honor.
Beforehand. And I guess I'm trying to trigger, in my mind, it seems to me a difference between a question that may be answered in such a way that commits a crime, which is, I'm refusing to take a test, as opposed to a question that might evoke testimony incriminating your client in some other crime. Do you see the difference?
Yes, Your Honor. First, they're asking about something else. The Fifth Amendment right is personal. I don't know if Friedman is, but I would guess it is. If you then commit a false official statement, that would be essentially spontaneous. Yes, you were asked a question, but you weren't asked to lie. So that would be a completely different case. I'd like to turn quickly to
You see what my problem, though, is that he's being asked a question that the answer is not testimony in the usual sense. He's not testifying against himself. He's committing a crime if he answers in a way that violates the law.
But that answer is the sole evidence. It's per se incriminating if he says no. Looking at the post-Friedman cases...
So is perjury. I mean, if a person's asked a question and they are, let's say he's put under oath before he's asked the question, even though but he's asked about something completely, they don't expect him, they don't have a reason to believe that he's going to lie, but they want the truth. And he lies. That is the crime.
There's no indication to the law enforcement officers or any state actor that an incriminating statement will come. So Miranda just doesn't apply. Here, they had a 50-50 shot of getting a no answer. They knew it. They even talked about it before they asked him the question. The reason I want to turn to the post-Friedman cases is the supposed flood of cases that would come. All the cases that have come, Friedman and Howell are the only two that were in custody and requested an attorney. There will not be a flood of cases. This happens rarely, but when it happens, the right has to be honored. Implied consent is a different animal than a search warrant. A search warrant is not a request. It is an order, a directive. The judge gives the order and directive. It's to the law enforcement officer. The law enforcement officer is to do what he's told. The law says, if the defendant says no, cease. That's all. It doesn't give the defendant a right. He doesn't have to be told. He can say no. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. My thanks to counsel for the argument today. This matter is now submitted to the court for its decision, and we will issue a written decision within the statutory time frame. So thank you again for your presentation. So with that.